Hello and welcome to the Bundesliga Show Monday edition of the obviously the roundup of week 25 of the Bundesliga season 23-24. As you can see, I'm joined by Peter, who I believe is on his travels again. Yeah, wow, he's really starting to travel the whole of Europe these days. Peter, how are you and where are you this Monday evening?
Well, I'm well, and greetings from Paris, site of the Olympic Games this coming summer. What a summer it is going to be in Europe between the Euros and the Olympics here in Paris. So hopefully it will be not my last sojourn here. I'm grateful to be with you. I was in Frankfurt and Freiburg this weekend doing some exciting in-stadium work. We'll hope to have some vlogs up on Over the Bar for everyone soon from those places. And another great weekend of Bundesliga football to talk about. So Kiosk is prepared whenever you're ready to start up with that.
Yeah, without doubt. I'm pretty sure Peter's probably got Le Monde to show us this week, maybe from Paris. But yeah, Peter's always trustworthy to go ahead with the Kiosk Club. But just before we start that, don't forget to keep liking, commenting, and subscribing on our work if you like what you see. Don't forget, we're also not only a podcast as well nowadays. So don't forget to kind of check out that, which you'll find in the description. But yeah, without further ado, Peter, go on, we'll start off. Have you got a German Kiosk Club this week or a French one as well, maybe?
Well, I left Karlsruhe very, very early this morning. And of course, I came by train. Luckily, no more strikes until tomorrow on the German side. But I picked up the kiosk there at the train station before I left. And I also, of course, picked up the Bild am Samstag, which you're absolutely going to love. I think this is their finest work of the season. Bayern's Formel Mainz. As you may know, Formel 1 is the German word for Formula 1. So we have a very interesting play on words here, Formel Mainz. And Formel can also be translated as formula. So if you're ready for a little bit of math, the Kane hat trick is described as Kane to the third power plus 5 equals 8-1. hopefully everybody's notes because there's going to be a short quiz on this afterwards. We hope that you're ready for that.
It's a very German headline, to say, that one, I think. Yeah.
Lots of math. I know you were told that there would be no math, but there is some math. A little bit of math. The Süddeutsche is going with Thomas Tuchel as der freie Mann. He is, of course, the free man. Rory and I were having a discussion about this a couple of weeks ago over whether Tuchel's departure would actually loosen up Bayern. Looks to be the case that it did. And in the Montag's kicker, something that I'll be writing about a little bit more in the column that'll be released tomorrow, it's time to talk about Dortmund. Is it schwarz? Is it gelb? Is it grau? Dortmund stand on the precipice of a massive rebuilding project this summer, and the kicker had a great story about which players are going to stay, which players are going to go, whether or not Terzic will continue some grades over Sebastian Kehl and his work in the last two transfer windows. Very, very interesting piece there. Probably could have done without the Peter Bosch interview about his time at Dortmund. Did not need to read that at all. That was very, very sad. But Dortmund is a big topic in the Bundesrepublik, and they're going to be among one of the teams that we'll be talking about tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is where we're going to be starting, actually, this evening. Yeah, we are going to be starting on the banks of the River Weser, where I actually was a couple of weeks ago as well. Anyone that follows the Instagram account will realize that I did spend a weekend in Bremen a couple of weeks ago as well. Fortunately, there was no football there, but I did get to check out the stadium along the banks of the magnificent River Weser. Have you been there, actually, Peter, to Bremen? It's a really nice city over there in the north of Germany. It's Have you had it?
Absolutely. Yes, I've been to Bremen and to Hamburg as well. Both Bremen and Hamburg are the Hanseatic city-state cities there in Germany. These are so Berlin, Bremen, and Hamburg are the three cities that are Hanseatic, or three cities that are actually also states. And so it's very, very, very beautiful, very, very mercantile, very, very Buddenbrooks for those who like Thomas Mann's novel as well. Hopefully we can make it up there to see a match someday because it's also a beautiful stadium and a wonderful fan base as well.
It's a football mad city as well. Not quite K-Town, but yeah, it's getting close. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, on to the match. I mean, it was a pretty interesting match. I think, Peter, you actually tipped a Dortmund win. I went for a Werder win. And to be honest, I felt this was a game that could have gone either way, in truth, in many ways. I think it was an interesting match with some very good goals in there as well. I mean, obviously, the opening goal was scored by Daniel Marlon. Before he was actually withdrawn at half-time after the Marcel Sabitzer red card on the stroke of half-time. I mean, I think probably there was a lot of looking towards Wednesday as well with the withdrawal of Marlon potentially, or maybe a little bit tactical. But that one surprised me a little bit because, you know, he did have a very good first half. And, you know, probably the goal of the match was that man, England's forgotten man, really, Jadon Sancho, scoring an absolutely brilliant individual goal, completely skinning Malatini in the Werder defence. He's not going to be remembering that one very well. But, you know, it was a really nice goal from the Englishman's perspective. And obviously his first goal back in German football, his first goal in a long, long time in general, because, you know, obviously he'd been sidelined by Man United for basically 6 months before he joined Dortmund. So, yeah, that was great to see from an English perspective and also for his career too, because he's really, you know, from when he was last playing at Dortmund, he looked a shadow of the player for periods. But he is slowly getting back, and this was a big goal for him. But then obviously the red card, I mean, that was a woeful tackle, wasn't it, really, from Sabitzer. And he realised straight away, I think he had no complaints, so that was always going to be a straight red card. And then, Peter, it led to a pretty tough second half, really, for Dortmund. I mean, obviously, and Ginmar ended up pulling a goal back, and then Werder had a few chances, really, particularly through Dutch, to pull the game back. But obviously, they're a little bit shot shy at the minute, aren't they? And they weren't able to get that equaliser. So, Peter, what did you make of this one, and any kind of tactical repercussions you saw in that game?
Yes, if memory serves correctly, I tipped a rather ugly Dortmund win, which is what it ended up being. Even though the first half was quite good, as a matter of fact, you mentioned Jadon Sancho's goal and Daniel Malen's goals. Both of those were excellent finishes. Füllkrug did some really great work on deep drops there. Emre Can played a good match for a change. I know that's not really saying much. It's kind of faint praise as of late. And Julian Brandt was also involved in a couple of the goals. He really looked good. This was a very, very interesting match tactically, in that Terzic made two changes in the second half, two major tactical shifts when he was reduced to 10 men. He initially went with a 5-3-1, and then he did a 5-2-2. In both cases, Mats Hummels was sort of anchoring a back five, and he was probably at fault for the lone goal that that Bremen did actually manage to score, because he missed a slide tackle there in the sequence that led to the buildup. Bremen themselves went all out, went total kitchen sink towards the end, and had Marvin Ducksch and David Konaki out wide, and both Nick Voltamada and Justin Njinma operating as eights, which was actually kind of Nick Voltamada as an eight. I think he found his that's maybe an unexpected calling there. I really like the work that he put in as an eight. I had a blast looking at this match from a tactical perspective. I know it wasn't necessarily, I mean, Dortmund fans absolutely hate that their team keeps winning ugly like this. But I had a blast dissecting it tactically. And it was one of the reasons why, I mean, I had a lot of in-stadium work this weekend, and then I had to travel to Paris today. So that's why I'm fighting to get this column done. Hopefully I have it finished tomorrow. But you could really, really get lost in this match on a tactical level. My opinion remains that the Edin Terzic coaching regime is still quite solid. And I actually like this team's chances against PSV in the Champions League midweek. It is their second consecutive win. They didn't necessarily play a horrible match against Hoffenheim in the most recent league loss either. So the top four race is getting a little bit interesting now. Leipzig, of course, kept pace with their win over Darmstadt. But basically, we have a top four side in Dortmund, even though people are understandably disappointed that, you know, they're not going for gold this year. that they're going to finish in fourth place, possibly fifth, but I think in fourth place. After last season, when they, you know, came within one, they, you know, just they almost got the title last season. It came down to the final match day, heartbreak, Taz's just tears. We're never really going to forget that. And people say, well, we go from that to a fourth place finish. Kale actually was complaining this week that Leverkusen stole the Dortmund harvest, the Ante, which is a little bit crybaby-esque, and I didn't necessarily like that that quote from him. That's not really a fair assessment of what happened in the league this season. But Dortmund fans can still be content that this team should be a top four side, that it will finish in the top four. And the rebuilding process that's going to take place over the summer, look, a lot of dead weight is leaving, you know, and there's certain targeted positions, more particularly the fullback positions, that that Kale can improve upon. So they still have a good future, and I would definitely endorse Terzic to stay in the position at this point. Do you feel differently about that, Mark?
Yeah, I was going to come on to that because, I mean, obviously the top four race is kind of heating up to be one of the most exciting elements of this season, you know, with many people considering the title race to be over. The bottom three looks all but consigned as well, with just the playoff spot to look at. But yeah, the top four is very much looking interesting. And for me, I would actually say Dortmund look the weaker of the four, of the three at the minute. If you consider it's, you know, Leipzig, Stuttgart and Dortmund in looking for two places, I would say they're the ones that are looking a little bit weak at the minute. And for me, a lot of whether Terzic stays, to answer your question, does depend on whether they get top four. Because I think, say they get quarterfinal, semi-final, the Champions League plus top four, it's a fine season at the end of the day. Like, you know, Dortmund fans won't thank me for saying that, but it's no disaster by any means. So, you know, the financial coffers will be boosted by this expanded Champions League next year, moving to the Swiss format, and then obviously a few other things as well. But for me, it's absolutely massive that they get the top four. Otherwise, you know, they're going to be massively restricted financially. They could potentially lose even more players. Although, to be honest, I'm not sure how many assets they really have at the club at the minute, in truth. You know, obviously Dortmund have always been a club that have been packed with assets, you know, Haaland, Bellingham, Jadon Sancho at his best, you know, that every year they have like a big sale. But this particular year, I'm struggling to see who they could really ship on for big money, in truth. You know, they're a bit of an older team than what Dortmund traditionally are. And I think, you know, it's possible that the continuity, if they do keep Terzic in charge, would be a favourable aspect for me. I think I would keep him, but a lot of it depends on whether they get top four, because I think failure to get top four would constitute a failed season, barring like a Champions League semi-final or even final. Then basically below the top four is not good enough for any BVB team, basically. So yeah, my kind of that's what I would consider it to be. But yeah, Rory's with us now, so yeah. So yeah, let's go on to the second game. Yeah, so yeah, I might as well lead this one as well. So yeah, this one was an interesting one. It was Frankfurt Hoffenheim. Obviously, Frankfurt celebrating their kind of 125th year anniversary as well. They had those beautiful kits as well, with those black and gold. I really thought that was a beautiful kit that they rolled out for this particular match. You know, 57,000 in the arena for this game. But I mean, I'm going to go to you first for this one, Peter, because it was your man, wasn't it? Josh Anthony Brooks. What can we say? He scored that brilliant header. I know that you would have been loving that one, Peter, that header that he scored. But then, I mean, what was that challenge that he put in for the red card? That was an absolutely, it was clumsy to say the least, wasn't it, Peter?
Yes, I mean, it was the agony and the ecstasy of John Brooks. A beautiful headed goal. I believe it was only Hoffenheim's second corner, goal scored off of a corner this season. And of course, I thought about both of you, particularly you, Mark, when John Anthony Brooks put that that wonderful bald head on a football and got it in the back of the net. The tackle itself, he did initially play the ball, but the follow through was incredibly dirty. I thank you for mentioning the kit. I want to get a brief mention in there. I was in Frankfurt doing some in-stadium work this weekend and picked up a lot of 125th anniversary memorabilia there. More of that to come when the vlog ultimately gets released. But in any event, this was a match in which Frankfurt, of course, benefited from the fact that both Hugo Larsson and Elias Skiri were in the starting 11 for the first time in over 3 weeks. A lot of people were giving up on Frankfurt, but the fact that they have these two players back and their mere presence enables Mario Götze to play a little bit further forward. Götze, of course, set up the second goal and scored the third himself, gives Frankfurt a chance here. They are sort of in a 4-1-4-1 as far as I could tell. Matarazzo, believe it or not, got his tactics right this time, I would say. He got a 5-2-3 rolling there with Andre Kramaric sort of serving as a deep drop 10 behind Bebu and Bayer. Brooks's red card threw a wrench into that, and it was no longer tenable, of course. What had to happen then was that Kevin Akpoguma had to move back into the back three, and Ilash Bebu had to move onto the wing. And as you and I have been grousing about out of position Hoffenheim players this entire season, Ilash Bebu on the wing, apart from Marius Bülter on the wing, is one of the biggest, most annoying ones that there is. So shorthanded, they, of course, didn't stand much of a chance. What do you have to add to that, Rory? Welcome. Glad you could join us.
Ooh, just unmute myself. Yeah, evening, everyone. Sorry for being late. Too busy dominating the local Sheffield five-a-side leagues to then have to have a quick shower. Two goals and assists, but yeah, it's all good. This game... Yeah, obviously for Hoffenheim, they seem to be stronger on the road than they are at home. But as you say, the red card for Brooksy Boy just threw everything into disrepute. Frankfurt were really dangerous on that on the counter, and you know, using the pace of Mbembe, it was really, really good going forwards. Götze controlled the midfield really well. I watched the last 30 minutes live, and then I've caught up with the rest of the highlights since. And obviously, the last half an hour is more of a procession, and it was just listening to the ultras basically in the stands and enjoying themselves more so than the football itself. Hoffenheim still, yeah, I mean, they might have been onto something if it weren't for the red card, of course. But Frankfurt was still gonna probably put in a decent performance. And obviously now it just really strengthens Frankfurt's hold and grasp on sixth place, doesn't it? So, they'll be thrilled about that. Looks like that they've pretty much secured sixth place for now. I don't see anyone else being able to put on enough of a run to catch them up. So, yeah, it was an important win for them. They can now just focus on trying to get a bit more consistency in their play. I think what Frankfurt are now five unbeaten as well. Haven't lost in their last five matches. Good run out for Frankfurt, albeit being helped by that big red card for Brooks. And obviously that now means that Hoffenheim are still only two wins all year. 2024 at least. And they're one of the most ill-disciplined teams in the Bundesliga. I think they're third on the list of cards received with, 70-odd, which obviously doesn't help one side. So, yeah, Pellegrino Matarazzo must have been most displeased with that. But, a much-needed and good win in the end for Frankfurt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, a lot of people have been classifying Todd Müller as basically on his way out in recent weeks too. But Peter, I know you described him. You described him as a sitting duck, I think, on Thursday. So, yeah, I mean, how does that strengthen his position? Because as you say, the table doesn't look that bad for them now. That this was a big win, it pretty much really, you'd imagine, guarantees them sixth place. I would say, they've got a 7-point lead there, which will be Europa League football next year. Which is a big improvement on last season's, eighth place. So, Peter, do you think that strengthens the position of Todd Müller, or you still think he's basically on his way out at the end of the season?
I think that Top Motor has settled down tactically a little bit here and has a basic system in place. And he has players that are sort of rounding into form. Niels Nkunku is unquestionably back after his suspension. I think that he's picked up a little bit where he's left off and has become once again a strong starting left back. A lot of what was going on with Frankfurt in the last few weeks had to do with those Larsson and Skiri injuries. Götze can still play anywhere, obviously. He's not to really an issue, I would say. But moving Tuta into midfield, and they even tried Donny van de Beek in midfield at one point. I mean, there were just so many experiments that simply weren't working out. In point of fact, when we were doing the prediction show on Thursday, you and I were talking about how Top Motor was essentially going to be a piece of dead weight. He was going to be a lame duck based on the recent results. So Frankfurt can probably hope for an easier Europa League finish at this juncture. A lot of that has to do with the fact that the competition is not terribly stiff. I mean, Hoffenheim are now 7 points behind them. A big win for Freiburg over the weekend, but they have a lot of ground to make up as well. Leipzig have their hold on the first Europa League place, but there really isn't much of a competitor for the second one. So, you can probably... We do have 9 match days remaining, so arithmetically a lot can happen. But so many patterns are emerging now. There are still matches that defy expectations, and we'll be getting ready to speak about 2 of them, I believe, in a moment. But when it comes to some of these races, particularly the race for the Europa League, Frankfurt and Leipzig, depending on whether or not Dortmund slip up, as I said earlier in the show, I don't think that they will. It's pretty much locked in. I don't think we have much of a race for Europe in the Bundesliga anymore. With that in mind, perhaps we'll talk about some of the more unexpected results, whichever one of you would like to lead off on that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure you can classify our game number 2 as being unexpected in some ways. I think both me and Peter did predict a heavy win for the Bavarians over, or the Star of the South, as they refer to themselves, over Mainz 05. I mean, yeah, it was a pretty bleak day for the Feltzers, wasn't it, Peter? Your brethren Feltzers. I mean, they got absolutely stuffed in this game, basically. Obviously, a hat-trick from Kane, another hat-trick from the Englishman, although it won't be the hardest hat-trick he scores, that's for sure, especially the first and third goals he basically couldn't miss. Goretzka with a double, you know, he's kind of springing back to form after a bit of a long period out of form, really, in truth. Müller with a rare goal as well, then Musiala and Gnabry with a return goal as well. So there was obviously a lot of positives for the Bavarians, building on that very, very convincing 3-0 win over Lazio, which I felt was probably their best performance of the season, in truth, against high-quality opposition and considering the pressure that was on them for that game. You know, they're definitely showing the signs that they could be back. I thought, you know, Goretzka was a lot better in this game. I felt that Müller did well starting. I know that he doesn't get many starts these days, but he definitely played well in this particular game. I felt as though that there were signs that Bayern are getting the confidence back, they're getting the verve back, you know. I think even it doesn't surprise me at all that Lima started in midfield as well in this game. I mean, what have I been calling for pretty much the entire season? And he did start in midfield again, and lo and behold, Bayern Munich play well. What a surprise. But yeah, basically the lineup looked very good. I believe that Goretzka Lima works well in midfield for me. Kimmich at right back, he's, you know, he probably won't be happy about playing there, but he's definitely doing pretty well in that position at the moment. As for Mainz, I mean, yeah, it's bleak, isn't it? What can you say for Bo Henriksen's side? When you lose 8-1 in any game, it's bleak. But obviously, let's not forget that beautiful goal from Nadim Amiri as well. One of the goals of the season, really. He smashes it in top corner from 35 metres out for his first goal since transferring from Bayer Leverkusen in January. But yeah, Rory, I mean, are Bayern back, basically?
I thought they were very, very good. I rewatched this game in its entirety, actually. And yeah, first half, First half, they were good. Obviously, the first half finished 3-1. And, it was close to being 2-1, obviously, before Kane got his second, a really perfectly taken goal. But Mainz had their moments on the break as well. And they, breaking out with pace at times. Gruder was leading the charge in that sense. And, that last pass, basically, which obviously didn't go to the right player, basically they didn't have enough players up front quick enough because they were breaking. You never know what might happen. I think they had a couple of early chances as well. Obviously, aside from the wonder goal from Amiri, a clean strike as you'll ever like to see. A lot of Bayern's goals in this game just reminded me of. Just felt very Bayern-like in the sense of the good play prior to and basically laying it on a plate for Kane to score or for someone else to score, basically like Goretzka's header at the end and many of the other chances. A bit of kind of flair being brought back into their match. Yeah, I mean, obviously when you're a sub in terms of Gnabry and you're, 6-1 up at the time or 5-1 up at the time, you can try these fancy flicks, and if they come off, then you look like a genius and everyone loves it. If you try that at 1-1 and you miss, then maybe you get a bit more stick. I thought Bayern were really, really good. Everyone that got on the score sheet played a good game. Anything in between that, obviously they'll be disappointed in the fact that they lost Alphonso Davies quite early on in the match. So hopefully that's not too much of a bad injury for him and that he'll be back relatively soon. Overall, the Lazio match, now this, they've got to be confident. How can you not by scoring 11 goals in two games? They know how to win championships at the end of the day, regardless of the state that people might think that Bayern are in. And so there's no reason why they'll feel any different about a title challenge. They'll obviously know that they're completely up against it. And they'll probably feel that not being helped by every single team that plays Leverkusen just wants to get a man sent off and then therefore make it slightly an easier contest for them. But they'll keep on plugging away. I'm sure they will. And, Leverkusen will have to earn it 100%. And we've maybe touched upon it a little bit, and maybe myself more so than others. But in any other year, Bayern would still be winning the championship. And from a points point of view, this Leverkusen team are just an exceptional team. They are just, hopefully not a once in a lifetime, because hopefully they can build on it. But they just have blown opposition out of the water. For Mainz, yeah, as you can say, they might have come into that game feeling that they've got a chance or that they can upset the apple cart, but just 8-1, write it off. Use the motivation to build something for the next game, but I think the worst thing that you can do is dwell on something like that. It happens to teams that go to Bayern, that go to Munich, and, it happens a lot in that stadium. So there's not much, maybe some defensive errors here and there, but yeah, sometimes you get an opposition that just wants to batter you and will do so because they have the means to do it. Harry Kane breaking any and every record that he can find, hat tricks, a perfect hat trick, left foot, right foot header. Overall, looking good. Gnabry coming back, good timing as well. So, yeah, all really good. And one last thing before I shut my mouth I just want to say credit to the referee and one of the other Mainz players who helped what could have been a quite serious situation to the Mainz players. Was it Guileu who who had that bad injury halfway through the first half, I think it was, when he ran into his own player's knee, got clean knocked out, and the referee and another Mainz player opened his mouth and prevented him from swallowing his own tongue and really fast thinking prevented what could have been a nastier situation. So I just wanted to lump a bit of credit on those fast thinking players and referees there.
Yeah, absolutely. And then Peter, I mean, I'll throw it over to you a similar question, because obviously it has only been two games of the upturn, but do you believe, like, also from a tactical standpoint, that Bayern have still got a lot to play for this season, and that there is still life in the proverbial tunnel at the minute?
Well, Rory pointed out the "in any other year" argument, and that's an important argument to broach. Let's take a look at where Bayern were round 25 last year. As a matter of fact, the three of us were sitting together. We were talking about Bayern's loss to Leverkusen just before the international break in round 25, what happened to be Julian Nagelsmann's last match in charge. Now, on a statistical level, they've scored plenty more goals. They have three more league victories. They have five more points than they did at this juncture last year. And things have loosened up for them since Thomas Tuchel's departure was confirmed. Additionally, Tuchel finally stumbled upon something that works tactically. We didn't get to see a lot of that in this match because the Alphonso Davies injury forced everybody back into a 4-2-3-1. But what he's been trying, what he used against Lazio in the Champions League midweek, and to a certain extent last week, is a 3-5-2 that has Leon Goretzka playing as the libero ahead of Matthias De Ligt and Eric Dier. And this moves both Kimmich and whoever's playing left back, be it Guerrero or Davies, into midfield. It gives Kimmich the chance to play in midfield where he wants to play. And it puts Leroy Sané and Jamal Musiala in sort of a very narrow patch of half space where they can make a lot of exciting things happen. Do they have anything to play for left in the league this year? No. I mean, Leverkusen took care of business. They are 10 points clear with 9 match days remaining. It will take a monumental collapse for Leverkusen to blow the title here. I don't think that it happens. Congratulations on making the quarterfinals to the Champions League. Harry Kane's going to break some records, even if he doesn't get any trophies. And it puts himself in good position for the Euros this summer, as does Dier. I would imagine that Dier is considered by Southgate for a call-up now after reviving himself there at Bayern. I think that he gets the regular starting center half position above Upamecano and Min-jae Kim at this point, too, based on what he's proven that he's been able to do. So a lot of the players have something to play for in terms of the coming Euros. But, I mean, I don't see how they scuff the title away at this point. I mean, if you have different opinions, let me know. I'm happy to hear, entertain other opinions on that matter.
No, I'm with you, Peter. I don't like to quite say sewn up yet, but I agree that they won't blow it. But I think we could potentially see them drop a few points at times, because I don't know if you guys have noticed it, but I have seen a little bit of nerves at times. Obviously, Leverkusen won the game 2-0 on paper, but against a poor Wolfsburg side, they were only 1-0 up very late on that game. A Wolfsburg side that had played basically over an hour with 10 men as well. I think earlier in the season, they would have been blowing them away 3 or 4-0 minimum, to be honest. And I'm not going to quite say nerves, but I see a little bit of trepidation at times in games where they're struggling to kill teams off, to defend very deep. But I agree that they'll see it through. I'm absolutely confident that they'll see it through. But whether it'll be easy and they'll just keep expanding on the lead, I'm not sure. I think they might win it by 4 or 5 points in the end. That'll be my prediction. I think they will. A few points will be dropped. And I think Bayern, I do believe they're back, kind of. I really do believe that. And I think they'll go and pummel Darmstadt next week as well, unfortunately. And that'll put pressure on again ahead of that Sunday game against Freiburg. But yeah, I still see Leverkusen winning it. Do you agree, Rory? Or do you think it is possible we could see a collapse?
I don't think we'll see a collapse, but I think we'll see points dropped, yeah. So I don't see the final margin being 10. I would agree with you, Mark, in saying I think it will be four or five. I think it will be sewn up with the title will be sewn up two games to go, maybe something like that. That's my thought. Mm. But yeah, we live in obviously in wait basically. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of these nine games and how it all shapes up.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking of two teams that obviously got a lot to play for over the next nine games as well, we've got the two Rhine derby sides, Borussia Mönchengladbach and FC Köln. We have had a couple of, from Moritz as well has come in saying that I'm gutted that I'm sure Peter will be annoyed that his favourite striker, Davy Selke, wasn't able to grab a winner. Yeah, I think he's a bit of a cult hero on the show, in all honesty, Davy Selke, going back a good few years since he was back at Werder Bremen. I think we started talking about him, Rory, didn't we? So he's always been a bit of a cult hero in truth. But yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it was, I agree with you, Moritz, as well. It was a crazy draw. It was a good game with quality, mistakes, just about everything, wasn't it? But yeah, thanks for those comments, Moritz. But yeah, I mean, what can you say about this game? It's been one of the stars of the Runde, really. Alidu, obviously, bagging a double, including the opener as well. Then Gladbach just kind of, very, very strong coming back. And Honorat scored the equaliser. Obviously, he's not been in the team in recent weeks, by the way. So he'll be happy to have got that equaliser. And then, obviously, 2-1 down, it was my man with his second doppelpack of the Ruck Runde, wasn't it? Former FC Nürnberg man, Robin Hack, who basically has done nothing in between those doppelpacks. But, yeah, he does like a double, doesn't he? Yeah, and then it was that man. I think, Peter, you've been calling him for a few weeks, haven't you? Downs, who got a really nice finish for the equaliser, the young man. I think he's only 19 years old. So it was great to see him get off the bench and score the equaliser there. But, I mean, there's so much to talk about with these two sides. I mean, from my perspective, I just thought it was much better from Köln, I'm going to be honest. I thought attacking, they looked like they had a threat. I thought Alidu was absolutely superb. Obviously, Downs off the bench getting that equaliser, which was really great to see as well. I felt as though it was, in general, a really good performance from the away side. And they were probably a little bit unlucky not to win. I thought Miner was a lot better too. Adamayan is still not getting the goals, unfortunately. But overall, my view is that it was a much better attacking performance from the FC. Obviously, Gladbach are one of the poorest defensive sides in the division. So, that obviously adds to it. Obviously, a point before the game as well, the fact that 300 arrests were made as well. Arrests were made outside the stadium. I think 200 from Köln and 100 from Gladbach, I believe, which is disappointing because, myself and Peter get over to a lot of games and usually it's a very, very friendly atmosphere. But obviously, this one boiled over a little bit too much in what is generally considered to be probably the second biggest derby in Germany after, obviously, the Revier derby between Dortmund and Schalke. So, go on, I'll come to you first, Peter, on this one. I mean, what did you make of it and who do you think were the better side in this draw?
Well, as Moritz pointed out, Köln also won the reverse fixture 3-1. Seems like an eternity ago that Stefan Baumgart's FC were. But that's, of course, the only time that they've scored three goals this campaign is in those two Gladbach matches. And they've only scored two goals on two other occasions. And we're through 25 rounds now. So what do I make of this? I make out that Gladbach are not a very good team. And I'm sort of basing that conclusion a little bit, not just on the fact that the defensive woes that you mentioned, but also Seoane is really starting to grate on me. Frank Honorat has played in all 25 Bundesliga fixtures, but he's only started something like 17 or 18. There was an article by my Bully News colleague, Runjerov, on our site today about how Seoane is talking about the competitions for the wing positions. There really shouldn't be all that much competition for. I mean, he's just rotating too many players in and out. Sometimes it's Ngumu, sometimes it's Hack, sometimes it's Honorat. Okay, if he had Alisson play in the mix, things would be a little bit easier. But there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to his rotations. And you can apply that to midfield too, when you look at how he's switching out Reitz and Neuhaus all the time. And in defense, why wasn't Itakura starting in this one? I don't believe he was hurt. Why are you starting Maximilian Weber and Nico Elvedi in central defense, you know, when you have Friedrich and Itakura? What is he doing with all these central defensive rotations? It's not making any sense. So, I mean, what's going on with Gladbach here? And, okay, if you look at the goals, the first one from Farid Alidou, how exactly was that a goal? I mean, it was from such a tight angle, and it just bounced in off of Moritz Nicholas's thigh. Pretty poor positioning from the goalkeeper in that case, if you want my opinion on the matter. The two goals, the Robin Hawk blitz double puck, came while Köln were trying to execute what was a very, very complicated tactical switch, in which he brought on Lead Pakarada for Linton Meiner, and he was moving Max Finkgräfe up top, and nobody was set. One of them came off a dead ball, and then they were shell-shocked, and he got another one really quickly. I do have a lot of positive things to say about Damian Downs, whom you mentioned I've been touting him for weeks. It's actually been months. If you're a super over-the-bar nerd, you can go back to like a prediction show, round six or something like this, in which I predicted that Damian Downs, because Baumgart was working him in. I thought he was going to get a start. I thought he was going to score, you know, start scoring goals a lot earlier. He's a really good talent. And yes, I'm biased. He's one of those German Americans, just like John Anthony Brooks. He's a soldier's son. Of course, I love him for the same reason. You know, I have to say that, you know, I'm surprised he didn't get a chance. You know, when people like Justin Diehl were brought up immediately, when somebody like Sarges Adamayan is starting, when Jan Thielmann was running as a striker for several weeks, Damian Downs is a very, very good player. And I expect a lot of good things from him in the years to come. Isn't it beautiful about the Bundesrepublik that we're still churning out these soldier sons, even though there are hardly any American troops left in Germany? I mean, you know, they keep coming. The few that we have there are siring the next generation of great footballers, and that's just wonderful. it's a beautiful look. That's why I love John Anthony Brooks so much, and guys like Fabian Johnson and Jermaine Jones and all of these. I mean, this is all, you know, it's German Timothy Chandler. I could go on and on and on. We don't have
Lewis Holby's another one, right? Lewis Holby that plays in Köln, Kiel at the minute. Is he a Jewel too? Or
perhaps.
I think he is.
Your boy in Nuremberg, Nathaniel of...
Yeah, Brown. Brown is.
Brown is one. And we also have... well, we had Terence Boyd at Kaiserslautern. Unfortunately, he's been let go.
Come on, he's a hero, Terence Brown. Terence Boyd. Yeah,
well, we're still doing it. But so to go back to I did answer the question, I believe I did, when I said that I just don't, I've had it with Gladbach, and I'm going to get this tactics column off tomorrow, and I'll give you a spoiler from the tactics column. I don't even think they beat Saarbrücken tomorrow night. I think they get thrown out of the Pokal because Seoane is just not allowing his players to get into any sort of a rhythm. He's shifting constellations. He's making too many questionable personnel changes. He's another lame duck that we got going at the end of the season here. Gladbach are just, they can't keep a coach for more than one season. It's it's ridiculous. Yeah. Whether it's Hütte and it's Fark and it's going to be Seoane again, ship him the hell out. I mean, I don't know. They need to bring in somebody who can put together a consistent footballing thesis. And yeah. I don't know who that is, but it's not Gerardo Seoane. And that's my opinion on the matter. It's not that Köln are so great, besides Damian Downs. But it's that Gladbach are so bad. That's my take on the matter. I'll turn it over to Rory with that.
Well, I think you covered it very well, Peter, actually. Yeah. There's a reason why Gladbach are often in our number one game of the featured four, or feature in the featured four all the time, is because they have the ability to score goals because they have talented players, and whether sometimes that just finds itself, which it leads to goals, and they concede so many because of the, as you've already mentioned, Peter, the rotation or chopping and changing of the team. It is, as you already alluded to, really hard to keep up with what midfield might appear. For Gladbach, the front three, what formation might be thrown out there. So it didn't surprise me that, well, obviously as a derby in itself, I thought this would throw up a really interesting game. And I thought Köln would come away unbeaten at least. As you say, it's not from Köln necessarily being fantastic. I think they've improved a lot in recent weeks, and they'll be desperately disappointed not to have got the win in the end. But yeah, just some. I don't think it's fair to say that Ali Du is the question to the ultimate answer of Köln scoring goals week in, week out. I think that will come. And I still think they'll struggle to score goals going forward. As you mentioned, Miner was better this week. Damian was okay. I thought Kainz was pretty good actually in this game. I think he had a good game. That's important for them going forward. Yeah, but otherwise, I mean, Köln just need to get wins, and just, they're just stumbling at the last. Köln are winless in five, and that's the wrong time for them not to be getting results, although performances have improved. So what, they now go to RB Leipzig, or they host RB Leipzig this weekend coming, I think, which will be an interesting match, I foresee. But again, still a really tricky one, and you know, for them to bridge the gap between 16th and 15th, they've got a lot of work to do. It was a crazy second half where we had four goals in 15 minutes, roughly speaking. So it, as a game, it was so very entertaining to keep an eye on. And Gladbach, I mean, you can say positively that they've only lost one game in five, but unfortunately, they've also only won one of those games. So it's really hard to kind of pick out certain positives for Gladbach. I feel really disappointed for Sio Arne, just because I seem to like him for some reason, not from a tactical perspective or from any footballing reason, but he came into Leverkusen, didn't he, and did an okay job in his first full season. And yeah, that things fell apart the following season. This full season that he's had with Gladbach just hasn't really worked. And I'll never forget your big tip of the Rückrunde mark for Gladbach being the most improved team of the... Well, and they have the players there, because when you piece together that midfield, you know, of Kone and Weigl, Neuhaus or Rocco Reit... Mm. Four really talented players in there. When they want to, they can defend well, because they showed it against Leverkusen not too long ago. So they can have a structure in place. And going forward, yeah, Ngumu, Honora, Chivantura, when, if he's ever fit again, Jordan and Plea, you know, they're players who can score goals as well. So there's something tangible there for Gladbach not to be this up and down team. But yeah, much like Peter, I honestly can't fathom or try to predict what they might come out with next.
Yeah, and obviously Gladbach, 49 goals now conceded in 25 games. I mean, they're conceding almost two goals a game on average. I mean, I think if you want to find out where their problems are, it pretty much lies there. And I couldn't agree more with Peter that some of their personnel, like not playing Itakura and playing Elvedi, who seems to have been poor for like 2 years, pretty much non-stop now, but still gets picked almost every week. So you've got to question that. But yeah, just a quick summary of the best of the rest. Obviously, Friday night, Stuttgart got a 2-0 win over Union Berlin to cement their position in the top four. You know, very, very comfortable for the Baden-Württembergers there. Then another, well, easy 2-0, but maybe a little bit underwhelming for RB Leipzig against beleaguered Darmstadt, who stayed bottom. you know, I think I'm sure Justin would agree that him and his boys would have been hoping for a few more than just two goals in that match. And, you know, the likes of Openda would have been hoping to fill the boots potentially against the weakest team in the league. But it wasn't to be, but still a win's a win, as they say. And then, yeah, talking of teams that are winning at the minute, FC Augsburg with a third win in a row. I think me and Peter both tipped it, but we expected more goals in this one. But, you know, a second straight clean sheet for the Bavarian Schwabians against their derby rivals, Heidenheim, puts them into the top half after 25 games. They're going to be getting dizzy heights at the minute at Augsburg, that high in the table. And then, yeah, obviously, Freiburg got a big win, actually, away in Bochum. Their first win in the league for, I think, six or seven matches. Backing up that really impressive 1-0 win over West Ham in the Europa League as well. And they'll be hoping they've got a massive game next week as well. Because, I mean, if they can turn West Ham over and get into the last eight, then it's been one hell of a run for them in the Europa League. And then, yeah, the other game we've not talked about was obviously Leverkusen's pretty much walk in the park, really, against beleaguered Wolfsburg, who are now 11 without a win. Only Darmstadt in the Bundesliga have a longer winless run than Niko Kovac's Wolfsburg. But once again, he lives to fight another day. And, yeah, Niko Kovac is still the manager of VfL Wolfsburg. So, yeah, that's pretty much everything for this week. So thanks again to some of you guys for checking in. Justin, some great comments from you as usual. Yeah, you went for a 3-0 win in that performance. And, yeah, you go for a 2-1 against Köln. But a win's a win, as they say. You know, you've got to keep plucking up those wins. Thanks to Moritz as well for his thoughts on Köln, and Erin and DM as well checking in with us. Yeah, if you enjoyed what you saw on the channel, then don't forget to check out our X feeds as well, at Over the Bar FB and at Over the Bar Extra, and also Rory on Village Footy 20. And again, we're not only a YouTube channel, we're also a podcast, which will be advertising the link. And don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. And check out our vlogs as well. As Peter said earlier, he's got his women's football vlog coming out as well, a double header, which is going to be really, really exciting to watch. And then obviously the two of us have got a lot of plans as well for the back end of the season in April and May to do more and more vlogs for you. So yeah, thank you very much for watching, and we'll see you again for the predictions on Thursday. See you then, guys.